Welcome to Making Waves, independent voices for peace and justice, your local connection to the world on WSCA LP 106.1 FM Portsmouth Community Radio. This is Amy Antonucci, and I'm happy to introduce our show to you today, June 17th, 2006. Our focus today is on action. Action to end the war, to save farms, to reform politics, and more. Here's what we have coming up. After some news, we'll bring you coverage of this past week's protest in Manchester, New Hampshire, regarding Karl Rove's appearance there. We'll then hear from some of the Dover Six, a group arrested on May 31st at an anti-war protest at Congressman Bradley's in Dover, New Hampshire, followed by an interview with Sarah Rich about her daughter who just refused a second Iraq deployment and was arrested. In our second hour, we'll get a report from the South Central LA farm where farmers and activists were evicted and some arrested this past week. We'll end with Between the Lines, independent radio out of Bridgeport, Connecticut. We'll also have music, announcements, and more, so stay with us. First, for some news. News you need to know on Making Waves. From the Times in the UK, Israel admits shell report flaws. Radio and hospital reports contradict the Israeli account of fatal beach explosion. The Israeli army has admitted to the Times that its official account of the explosion that killed 8 Palestinians picnicking on a Gaza beach last week was flawed. The account is also contradicted by a UN radio transmission. The army has told the Times that its report was flawed because it failed to mention 2 gunboat shells fired at about the time of the deaths, and insists, however, that they landed too far away to have been responsible. Video footage of the anguished 11-year-old running between the corpses of her family on the beach caused fury across the Arab world. Immediately after the explosion, Israel expressed regret and suspended all artillery fire, but never admitted responsibility. On Tuesday, the Israeli military issued the results of an investigation that exonerated itself. Officials said that the explosion could have been caused by a Palestinian landmine. Israeli military officials did concede that they made an error in the summary of the investigation's conclusions concerning shells fired by ships. And from the Interpress Service on June 15th, Caterpillar pressured over weaponized bulldozers. The parents of a U.S. peace activist who was crushed to death by an Israeli bulldozer built by the global machinery giant Caterpillar confronted the company Wednesday for the first time and urged shareholders at its annual meeting to end sales of weaponized bulldozers to Israel. Cindy and Craig Corey, parents of the late Rachel Corey, attended the meeting as proxy voters on behalf of Jewish and Christian institutional investors who have filed a resolution asking for greater corporate accountability from Caterpillar. Activists supporting the parents who lost their daughter in 2003 say that the company sells machinery to the Israeli army in violation of its corporate accountability pledge and knowing full well that the equipment will be used for the destruction of Palestinian homes and farms. Matt Gaines of the Stop Cat campaign said in a telephone interview, "We are part of a growing movement for corporate responsibility in the United States." Caterpillar has become the poster child for U.S. companies that are being targeted in divestment drives for their role in human rights abuses by the Israeli army in occupied Palestinian land. Rachel Corey was killed in the town of Rafah while she and other members of the International Solidarity Movement were trying to stop the demolition of a Palestinian house in the Gaza Strip on March 16, 2003. From The Guardian, on Thursday, June 15th, U.S. seen as a bigger threat to peace than Iran, worldwide poll suggests. George Bush's 6 years in office have so damaged the image of the U.S. that people worldwide see Washington as a bigger threat to world peace than Tehran, according to a global poll. The Washington-based Pew Research Center, in a poll of 17,000 people in 15 countries between March and May, found more people concerned about the U.S. presence in Iraq than about Iran's alleged nuclear weapons ambitions. The survey, carried out annually, shows a continued decline in support for the U.S. since 1999. The U.S. image for most of the 20th century has been relatively positive, being regularly associated with democracy, human rights, and openness. But even in the UK, Washington's closest ally, favorable ratings have slumped from 83% in 99 to 56% this year. The pattern is similar in France, down from 62 to 39%, Germany, 78 to 37%, and Spain, 50 to 23%. In Muslim countries, with which the U.S. has traditionally enjoyed a good relationship, such as Turkey and Indonesia, there have also been slumps. In Indonesia, favorable ratings for the U.S. dropped from 75 to 30%, and in Turkey, from 52 to 12%. As part of the overall decline in U.S. support, the survey also records a drop in support for the U.S.-led, quote, war on terror, end quote, even in countries such as Spain, in spite of the Madrid bombings 2 years ago by Al-Qaeda that left 192 dead. From the New York Times on June 14th, anti-development protesters are arrested at farm site in Los Angeles. More than 40 protesters, including the actress Daryl Hannah, were arrested on Tuesday after they refused to leave the 14-acre South Los Angeles farm they are trying to prevent from being developed. Some protesters were arrested after blocking intersections near the farm. Sheriff's deputies cut others from trees and picnic tables where they had chained themselves in defiance of an eviction order. Ms. Hanna told the Associated Press by cell phone before she was removed from the tree, "I'm very confident this is the morally right thing to do, to take a principled stand in solidarity with the farmers." Advocates say the South Central Farm, surrounded by warehouses in a blighted area of the city, is the largest urban farm in the country. About 350 families, mostly Latino squatters, have been cultivating corn, squash, tomatoes, and cactus on the spread for years. A host of celebrities, including Joan Baez, Danny Glover, Martin Sheen, and Willie Nelson, have joined the farmers and protesters who have camped out on the land for weeks. Rufina Juarez, who has farmed a plot on the land for 8 years, said, "You can see street after street of warehouses. Why do we need another warehouse?" Last week, after a $10 million pledge from the Annenberg Foundation, the protesters held out hope that the Trust for Public Land might be able to buy the site. But the owner, Ralph Horowitz, said Tuesday that because the Trust was unable to come up with the $16.3 million purchase price by a recent deadline, he would proceed with plans to develop the site. Many protesters near the farm late Tuesday morning held signs criticizing Mayor Villaraigosa as not doing enough to save the farm. The mayor responded, "Everyone involved who cares about this garden and who cares about the farmers who have built an oasis in a sea of industry and concrete has done everything possible to meet the property owner's demands." The South Central Farm has had a convoluted ownership history. After Mr. Horowitz bought the site in the 1980s, the city seized it from him using eminent domain. It was converted to farm use after the 1992 riots. Mr. Horowitz bought back the land from the city in 2003, a purchase the farmers are disputing in court because they believe the $5 million he paid was substantially below market value. Alberta Tolotoa, 20 years old, said, "There's no Trader Joe's in South Central." He, like many of the farmers, used the plot to feed his family rather than selling the vegetables for profit. "The things we grow here," he said, "are the best things we eat." Stay tuned in the second half of our show today for more in-depth reporting about the South Central farm situation. Our last news story today concerns U.S. Army First Lieutenant Aaron Watata, who became the first commissioned officer to publicly refuse deployment to the unlawful Iraq war and occupation on Wednesday, June 7th. A press advisory released by his supporters said that on Thursday, June 8th, 2006, Lieutenant Watata's commanding officer moved to prosecute the lieutenant for protected speech, an official investigation into his public speech in opposition to the illegal war in Iraq is underway. In response, Lieutenant Watata confirmed, "I have a legal and ethical obligation to speak out against and refuse to fight this patently illegal war in Iraq. This has not changed." Eric Seitz, lead attorney for the lieutenant's legal team, declared, "It is obvious that the military is simply trying to keep him from speaking out in opposition to the unlawful war." On Wednesday, June 7th, U.S. Army First Lieutenant Aaron Watata became the first U.S. commissioned officer to publicly refuse deployment to the unlawful war and occupation of Iraq. Standing before the national media at a Tacoma, Washington press conference, Lieutenant Watata outlined his duty to refuse the illegal order to deploy in support of an illegal war.
Oh, I march to the Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British War. A young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't marching anymore. For I killed the share of engines in a thousand different fights. I was there. Mexican land, fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. To the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. They close the missile plant. The United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason. Call it love or call it reason. But I ain't a marching anymore. No, I ain't a marching anymore.
That was Phil Oakes with "I Ain't Marching Anymore." And now to Damon Thomas, reporting for Making Waves at the Karl Rove protest on Monday, June 12th, 2006.
This is Damon Thomas from Making Waves. It's a sunny afternoon. I am standing in a park across the street from a building known as the Center of New Hampshire in downtown Manchester, New Hampshire. And in that building, scheduled to speak just about as I'm speaking right now, is Karl Rove, President Bush's presidential advisor. He's attending a fundraiser here and is the featured speaker. And I can assure you that there's been a hearty welcome for Mr. Rove by a crowd that's been gathered across the street from the center of New Hampshire here at a park in downtown Manchester. It's not the kind of welcome that he would probably want or expect. All around me, over 100 people from across the Granite State have gathered in Veterans Park to call on the New Hampshire Republican Party and the Republican National Committee to stop stonewalling the investigation into the 2002 Election Day jamming of Democratic Party and professional firefighter phone lines by Republican Party officials. Again, as I've said, this rally is coinciding with White House Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove's appearance at a New Hampshire Republican Party event to raise funds to cover expensive legal fees associated with the 2002 phone jamming. James Tobin, who was convicted by a jury of his peers for his part in the phone jamming crimes, made about 24 calls to the White House Political Affairs Office on the day before and the morning of Election Day 2002. Current RNC Chair Ken Mellman headed the White House political affairs operation at the time. Rove previously held a fundraiser for the New Hampshire Republican Party in July of 2004, raising $44,000, which covered all the legal expenses associated with the phone jamming case for the next year. Since the second quarter of 2005, the New Hampshire Republican Party has spent an additional $35,137 on their legal bills for the case, leaving them with only $460 in cash on hand at the end of the last filing period. Rove's fundraiser here will essentially cover these expenses once again. Now, as of March 31, the New Hampshire Republican State Committee has spent $80,525 on the law firm of Devine Millamet, which has used numerous legal tactics to prevent New Hampshire voters from learning the truth about the 2002 phone jamming crime, in which the state party jammed the phone lines at Democratic Party offices and the Nonpartisan Firefighter Association in order to help Senator John Sununu win election to the U.S. Senate. The New Hampshire Republican Party has even gone so far as to file an absurd countersuit against the New Hampshire Democratic Party, the victims of the crime, in an attempt to slow the legal process and prevent their staff from being forced to testify under oath about the incident. And I've taken some time to listen to the different speakers and to interview people who are speaking today, and also to get the gauge the opinions of folks who are attending the rally, why they're here. They're a varied bunch, and they all have their varied reasons, but all stand in opposition to Karl Rove and the policies he stands for, particularly with respect to the stonewalling of the truth on the phone jamming issues. All around me, there are numerous signs that reflect the outrage and the anger of the citizenry. One sign in front of me says, Republican operatives violating election night, the initials for Rove. In clean elections, Dems win. Clean elections now, say some of the signs. Another sign says, time for truth. Can you hear us now is another sign. Make the scary Republican go away. No more phony elections. No more dirty tricks. Stop the stonewall. Yes to clean elections. No to dirty tricks and cover-ups. Phone jamming. Who knew? Who covered it up? And another sign, how high did it go? Now, this is an example of smattering of some of the opinion of the folks who are gathered here in Veterans Park in Manchester. One of the folks I'm with is Susan Bruce of the New Hampshire Citizens Alliance. Susan, you're here, and these people are here. Why?
Well, the irony, really, more than anything else. The irony of a Republican fundraiser with Karl Rove as the speaker. Mr. Rove has testified 5 times before grand juries, and here he is at a Republican fundraiser, some of the funds which will go to pay for the legal defense of James Tobin, who was one of the convicted phone jammers here in New Hampshire. It's just one of those things. It's too good to miss. We had to be here to give Karl a warm New Hampshire welcome.
I've already announced what's showing on many of these signs all around us, and there's a few that I've missed. Rove, R-O-V-E, Republican officials violating elections, Bush is bad for America, clean elections now, many signs for that. Not to neglect the budget wheel of fortune, set up to show exactly how much of each tax dollar goes towards the war and the Pentagon and military applications. Common theme here.
Yes, yes, definitely. You know, I think people come out for things like this because of great frustration with the way things, the direction our country is going, the powerlessness that we all feel about the electoral system. So standing around waving a sign may not seem like it is particularly effective, but for everybody that's driving by and beeping their horns, they know they're not alone, and we all know we're not alone. And, you know, sometimes that's the best you can hope for in this political climate.
That's a very important point, because sometimes it's a feeling of knowing that you're not just isolated in your own situation, in your own home, under your own circumstances, but you share common thoughts, common concerns, common anger with many other people.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Especially, you know, I think it depends, too, on where in the state you're from. Up where I live, I am largely alone, so it's nice to be down here and not being alone. Up in the North Country, I'm kind of an oddity.
All more power to you, all the same. Thanks again, Susan.
Oh, well, thank you.
What do we want? Clean elections.
When do we want them?
Now.
What do we want?
Clean elections.
When do we want them?
Now.
And what brings you to Veterans Park across the way from Karl Rove's speech?
My name's Mark McKenzie with the New Hampshire AFL-CIO, and I'm just, you know, here to make sure that people understand that this is a really nasty thing that was done in New Hampshire. It's affecting and manipulating, or potentially manipulating a race in the state. We think it's not fair play. A number of people have gone to jail as a result of this, and we think the message should be loud and clear that they shouldn't be here raising money on behalf of the party who really spent probably a lot more money than they should have defending these people.
Mike, I've noticed it's brought out people of a number of varied folks from all across the state. I think that participation is indicative of just the widespread maybe anger and disgust. There's a general theme here of unethical behavior, of dirty money, of non-clean elections, of manipulative, un-American behavior. And your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think if you start jamming phones during the course of an election, and a very significant election in New Hampshire, there was a lot at stake in that election, then I think it's unethical, and I think it's something that speaks to the values that you have as an organization. And then I think the whole idea that, you step up to the plate and spend what amounts to thousands of dollars in defense of people, I also think is just piles on top of the unethical behavior. And then to bring a major fundraiser into the state in light of all what's gone on, and then claim that it has nothing to do with the amount of money you spent on defense of these guys, I think is another political blunder on their behalf to think that we're not smart enough to cut through that whole thing.
Thank you.
What do we want?
Clean elections.
When do we want them?
Now.
What do we want?
Clean elections.
When do we want them?
Now.
Okay, I think it's time to end this culture of cheating that characterizes the Republican Party. And as my sign shows here, Roe v. Ruiz is representative of the woman who won the Boston Marathon until an investigation was launched, and they showed that she cheated. And I think this is what the Republican Party is doing. Their candidates are winning the race, but investigations are showing that they're not following the rules.
What do we want?
Clean elections.
What do we want?
Now.
The leftist marching band is here in spirit, but sadly there's not enough of us here in instruments to play. But we're here in spirit to support the cause, and sadly Karl Rove will be insulated from all of this, but hopefully some people will realize we're out here.
What do we want?
Clean elections.
What do we want?
Now!
I'm Tim Decker. I live in Manchester, New Hampshire. I'm here today because I think it's time that we find out how far up in the Republican Party this phone jamming scandal went.
Yes, just that I'm out here today like all these other people in the interest of clean elections, keeping people from voting, the most basic right we have in a democracy, is simply unacceptable to me. We have to tell them that it isn't acceptable.
I notice your sign says, in clean elections, Democrats win. That seems to be the general theme here.
Well, I think we saw that in the last two presidential elections, among many others.
Thank you.
What do we want?
Clean elections.
What do we want?
Now.
I'm Herb Moyer, Exeter. I'm the vice chair of the town Democratic Committee, and I'm on the board of Democracy for New Hampshire. And one of the key points that Democracy for New Hampshire wants to make is that elections need to be fair and open. And anything that anybody does to interfere with the democratic process, in our view, is really the antithesis of what America is all about. People don't like cheaters, and obviously some people cheated in this election in 2002. So we'd like to know who's involved, how high does this go. There is clearly some phone calls to the White House that need to be investigated. And people need to be brought to justice so that the message gets out there. You violate the democratic process, there are serious penalties to pay. So that's really why I'm here.
That was a sampling of remarks from different folks who were assembled here at the rally at Veterans Park in downtown Manchester to greet Karl Rove and his arrival in the Granite State. And I'm standing in front of a table with a wheel called the Budget Wheel of Fortune. Most of this circular wheel depicts the word Pentagon, and it takes up easily half of this wheel. The remaining slivers of this wheel, of this pie, are dedicated to education, a tiny sliver for world hunger, a small segment for transportation, a small segment for health, a small segment for human services, a very tiny segment for science and energy, a tiny segment for community development, a slightly larger segment for environment, administration, housing, a small section for agriculture, and another small section for foreign affairs. Clearly, the Pentagon, a military-related segment of this budget wheel of fortune, consists of largely of military and Pentagon spending. I'm here to talk more with the man behind the table.
Hello there. I'm Russell. I'm with Priorities New Hampshire. We're a nonprofit here in New Hampshire educating folks about the federal budget. That Wheel of Fortune pie chart that you just talked about is in fact a discretionary federal budget. Every year Congress haggles over it, but it almost stays the same, with the Pentagon getting about 50% of every tax dollar that goes to D.C. You know, ideally we're out here today hoping that Mr. Rove will see our Pie-Mobile vehicle and our piggy vehicles driving around, and Mr. Rove will go, "What's over there? Maybe I should talk to those people." And he'll come up to the wheel and he'll put the chip down, we'll give it a spin, and we'll get to talk to him about the federal budget.
What kind of feedback have you had on the wheel today?
Mostly positive feedback. We are called predominantly Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities. That's our national name. Sensible being the key word. We have an act in Congress right now in Washington, D.C. called the Common Sense Budget Act. Common sense being the strong two words in that. And when you talk to American citizens about things that are sensible and things that make common sense, like taking money, wasteful spending, and cutting weapons we don't need and weapons that don't work out of the Pentagon and putting it into the other priorities that Americans have told us they want, they buy it. It makes complete sense. They have to balance their budget. The businesses they work for or the businesses that they run have to balance their budget. The Pentagon doesn't even really have a budget. They don't even really keep books. Donald Rumsfeld himself said that the books are cooked. You know, they need help. He needs help, outside help, to figure out how to make things more efficient in the Pentagon. So I give that message to the folks here on the sidewalk in Manchester. They get it.
Thank you. Well, that's a story here across from the Center for New Hampshire. Group of Granite Staters meeting Karl Rove and giving a rousing New Hampshire welcome. And for Making Waves, this is Damon Thomas.
Now! What do we want? Clean elections!
When do we want them?
Now!
What do we want?
Clean elections!
When do we want
them? Now!
Here comes Jay Mankita with They Lied.
They lied, they lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, they lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. I ain't telling you nothing you don't already know, but the government's been lying to you, Joe. They're shaking your hand while showing you the door to a foreign land, so you can fight the poor, where every Arab is a terrorist and they're hiding weapons that don't exist. You can join a coalition of willing nations willing to kill civilians for the corporations. They lied, they lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, they lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. Tonight is the night that you give up your rights to the Patriot Act and the perilous fight, but you won't remember which country you're in when you wake up in the morning by the dawn's early light. If it reminds you of the Third Reich, you better keep quiet. If you don't like, better watch your backs, cover your tracks, cause you're paying for it all with your federal tax. They lied, they lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, they lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. Now come on, did you see that presidential smirk? Say don't look now, it's Captain Kirk. He's an arrogant jerk, though likable too, but the Federation's been lying to you. The Federation, the corporation, is supposed to be public radio station. They're violating the neutral zone to promote the imperial corporate nation.
Blow up Afghanistan, nuke Iraq. We got the biggest phasers on the block. We're the world's policemen around the clock. You got the comm now, Mr. Spock. To the victors go the spoils. The lithium crystals, petroleum oil. They hit our freedom for no good reason. Arabs and Klingons, it's open season. They lied, they lied. They took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, they lied, but no matter what they tried to hide. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. So you know that the government's been lying to you. And I know that it ain't nothing new. That's politicians, that's what they do. They've been lying since 1492. They didn't teach me when I was a kid about all the terrible things that we did. We'll always honor this sacred treaty with a smallpox-covered blanket, sweetie. Agent Orange and Napalm, Gulf of Tonkin, Vietnam, Iran, Contra, Watergate. It's a history of the criminal state. We're spoon-feeding it right out of the box. We're fair and balanced, says the Fox, while talk show shills are shouting out, it's liberals we gotta be worrying about. They lied, they lied. They took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. My mom said, really, if the news was controlled by corporate money and held in a stranglehold, I would have heard about it on the TV. If it was really so important, then I would have been told by the newscasters and the pundits and the anchors and their pals, the politicians, generals, and bankers. You say they're doing the old bait and switch, but why would they lie? They're already rich. Power corrupts, it's the ancient trend. List of lies will never end. New lies coming around the bend. Speak truth to power if truth is your friend. They lie to me, they lie to you. They lie to themselves, it ain't nothing new. They lie to the press who passes the buck. They lie to the world, now everybody duck. They lie, they lie. They took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lie, they lie. But no matter what they tried to hide. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lie.
That was They Lied by Jamie and Keita. Next, for some brief statements by the Dover Six, collected on Thursday, June 15th. This is Amy Antonucci with Making Waves. I'm sitting in an apartment in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, with a number of the Dover Six. The Dover Six were arrested 2 weeks ago in Representative Bradley's office, and we're going to ask them to tell us in their own words today why they did that. Why don't you tell me your name and a little bit about why you chose to participate in this action?
Hi, my name is Lee Roberts. I live in Portsmouth. And I have been concerned about the war, about the deaths, about the illnesses, the wounds, about the death and issues facing Iraqi civilians. But I've never really acted out until I took part in a protest in New York. About 300,000 people a month or two ago joined together there to protest the war, and I was very energized by the real passion that was shown that day. So when it came time to go to the office of our representative, who has consistently and continually done absolutely nothing about facing the fact that we need to have some exit plan from Iraq. There's been a great deal of death, a great deal of money spent, all of which horrifies me, along with the fact that I don't think that we ever should have been there to begin with. So I decided to go, not realizing that once I was there, I would feel so passionate myself that I would decide that I needed to complete my action by actually becoming involved with civil disobedience and refusing to leave until we had some response from Bradley as to going to Congress and taking action to have at least major discussion about withdrawal of troops from Iraq.
Thanks, Lee. Nina, how about you?
Hi, I'm Nina Jordan, and I'm from Lee, New Hampshire. I have felt that our presence in Iraq has only exacerbated the problems that came to Iraq once we started this war, which we should never have done. These people never, ever attacked us. And it seemed that the spur for all of this war was 9/11, and there were no Iraqis involved in that. And so it is just so very wrong, and I knew that I had to put my body where my mind and heart are, and that was in protest to this war and demand that we stop putting monies toward it and that we must begin an exit strategy. And I feel that it's consistent with all my spiritual values that I should protest this war, risk arrest, and perhaps someday risk going to jail. It's worth the risk.
Thanks, Nina. Bill Woodward from Durham.
I don't know if anyone said that we belong to the Seacoast Peace Response, an organization which has a mailing list of about 450 members from the Seacoast communities from Maine to New Hampshire. That our action was coordinated by New Hampshire Peace Action, which is an even larger group representative of the entire state. And we feel, based on survey research at the UNH Survey Center, we feel that we are representing the majority opinion of the state of New Hampshire on issues related to the war, namely the wish to stop spending money, the wish to withdraw the troops on a timetable relatively quickly, the feeling that this administration has let us down in general. There's an increasing sense that this administration is leading us down an economic road that is very dangerous. $1 trillion, according to a Harvard Magazine report, of the cost of this war, at the expense, of course, of social programs. So for all of these reasons, we think this war is a crime against humanity, a crime against Iraq, and a crime against those patriotic citizens who are serving this war. And that's why I felt I wanted to make an act of conscience and join a protest in Senator Bradley's office and to encourage others to stand up to this congressman who has supported the administration viewpoint over 90% of his votes. He's not a moderate Republican. He's, like the administration, he's an extreme Republican. And we want to encourage the challengers to vote against him and to vote for an anti-war candidate in the upcoming election.
Thanks, Bill. Macy.
I'm Macy Morse, and I live in Portsmouth. I went with my friends to Congressman Bradley's office 2 weeks ago. We went with questions and demands from him to fix a date to stop the war in Iraq. My opposition to the war in Iraq is based on the fact that we have had no right to go into a country like Iraq and start killing people. I just could not stand by and watch this happen without trying to address the issue in the congressman's office.
Thanks, Macy. And here we have Randy Kezar from Kingston, New Hampshire.
We had many reasons for opposing the Iraq war and for demonstrating in Bradley's office on May 31st. We started off that day by reading the names of New Hampshire casualties to honor people who have been killed in the war. And then we proceeded to read names of American casualties. And we also honored, the Iraqi casualties by reading some of their names also. The human cost is very real. On May 31st, we read 11 New Hampshire casualties. It's now June 15th, and the 14th New Hampshire guardsman was killed within the last 2 days and was announced today. One of the statements that we're calling for is not one more death. And my sense is that this is a national emergency, and we're expecting our representatives to respond in kind and to speak out in Congress and to encourage a meaningful debate in Congress about an exit strategy from the war. Currently, there is a debate on the floor in Congress, but it's a meaningless debate. They've weakened it to the point where no essential motions can be made. We really require our representatives to speak out and come to a conclusion to this war.
Thanks, Randy. We've been speaking today with five of the Dover Six. Aaron Kareen could not be with us at this point. about their action on May 31st, Wednesday, at Congressman Jeb Bradley's office in Dover, New Hampshire. They're going to be arraigned June 23rd in Dover Court at 8:30 in the morning. They would love your support if you would like to come. Prior to the arraignment, beginning at 8, there will be a march from Henry Law Park to the Dover District Court, which they would also love for you to attend. This is Amy Antonucci with Making Waves.
The new ruling party is holding the aces. The rest of the cards are all missing faces. I'm sorry I can't know you today. What can one say? I will not obey. Give us your sons and give us your daughters. No one is safe or immune from the slaughter. How indifference makes them rage. What can one say? I will not obey. National Guard or freedom fighters, all houses belong to cigarette lighters. But who hides in the smoke? What can one say? I will not obey. Better perhaps to perish outside of the bunkers where our generals hide. I turn away and spit. What can one say? I will not obey. Give us the minds of your children to learn the substance of books we have not yet burned. But can they read the sky for rain? What can one say? I will not obey. Soon all tyrants will feel our impatience. We choose to create our own combinations. I was always willing to agree. What can one say? I will not obey. The essence of contract is agreement, not coercion or obedience. And agreement is sacred. What can one say? I will not obey. There are so few wars of people's liberation, for the people have so seldom risen. Only the armed faction, listen, the armed faction lies. They recreate the state through their action. When the people rise, it is not they, but the state which dies. I sing this song for the prisoners' release, most of all now for the new state police. You see, the guns have changed hands. Again. What can one say? I will not obey.
That was Utah Phillips with I Will Not Obey. We now bring you this interview from low-power radio station KSOW.
This is Scott Berguin of KSOW LP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We have on the phone Sarah Rich, who is the mother of Suzanne Swift, young woman, military woman, who has been arrested recently for being AWOL and refusing to go back to Iraq. And we don't know exactly where she is right now, but presumably on her way to Fort Lewis in custody of military police. Well, hello, Sarah.
Hi, Scott.
How are you holding up? This has to be an incredible just last couple of days, but I know this has been going on for a few weeks, hasn't it?
You know, it has been going on for a while, but I tell you what, this is nothing like it was when she was in Iraq. You know, at least we can do something to help her and be active instead of sitting on our hands and twiddling our thumbs knowing she was being harassed and treated terribly when she was in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Now at least we can do something to help her.
So this is obviously a story that has a lot of depth. It's not, it's bad enough, the situation in Iraq, and that she had to spend at least a year there. Is that correct?
She was there for a year, yes.
Okay, but she's also suffered from what's happening to, of course, many soldiers that have to spend time there, but also, as you mentioned, sexual harassment along the way.
Right,
And now there's other things that have been going on with her, you might say, lied to and mistreated by the military since day one, it sounds like.
Since day one, before day one, before mm-hmm. when the military recruiters were, you know, courting her and wooing her and bringing her into the Army fold, she was told that if she signed up for the special deal of 5 years as a military police officer, she would not be deployed to Iraq, and that she could travel in other places, and she would make money for college and things like that. She was told all kinds of things, and then she signed on the dotted line, and I don't know if she read the fine print that said, you know, that the Army can change anything on this, you know, in this agreement at any time. And now she is property of the U.S. Army, is what I was told.
Well, it sounds like they broke that part of the agreement really early. She went to Iraq right after basic training, is that right?
Within a month.
Within a month. And an excellent article, I thought, in the Register Guard that came out today that covers the story. There's, it sounds like even, one, she's a military, when is a military police person, right?
She was a military police officer.
But like many who go there, they end up in combat roles. Is that correct?
She was she drove the Humvee for her unit doing combat patrol.
Okay. And can you say more about her experience while in Iraq? It sounds like you had some regular contact with her.
I did have regular contact through instant messages and chats and on the phone. Usually the computer more than the telephone. And most of the time it was stressed, scared, and depressed. It was really hard for her to be there. It was hard for her to see the children in the streets that didn't have anybody caring for them. It was hard for her to see the dead people on the side of the streets rotting. It was hard for her to be fired, shot at. It was hard for her to see her friends being dismembered and killed. The whole thing was hard for her.
Right. And then,
you know, she ended many a phone call and many an instant message by, oh, there's gunfire, I got to go.
Right. So, and again, I mean, that's horrifying enough, but it apparently, on top of that, she was not being as supportive as from especially the commanding officers in her own unit. She was being harassed by several.
There are a few sergeants in particular that were really horrible to her and would pressure her to have sex with them and would punish her if she wouldn't. You know, basically, she was damned if she would and she was damned if she didn't. I think I can count on one hand the soldiers that did not proposition her or harass her while she was there. And she was in a camp of 500 people, and they had people, different troops and units moving in and out of their camp for supplies and rest and showers and things like that. It was definitely not friendly, and she was harassed daily.
It's unimaginable to me. I don't know. We've heard these stories, and it apparently is not uncommon, of women in the military who, for example, the stories about the women are afraid to go to the latrine.
Right, to die.
Right.
Of dehydration.
Right.
That is a very real thing for women in the military in a war zone. Any kind of combat.
Were there other women in her unit?
There were two other women that I remember.
Okay. Is your daughter, was she familiar with or aware of this, what's his name? I'm not going to be able to think of his name. The first lieutenant from Fort Lewis that just came out.
Watada?
Yes.
Yes, she was.
Okay.
He hadn't issued a statement before she was taken in, but she heard about him and she put her eyebrows up and went, wow. She didn't know what he was going to say because he hadn't issued a statement before she was taken into custody. But when I read it to her, she was like, "Wow, he has a lot of guts."
So what is it, do you think, that finally, I believe your words were, broke your daughter in terms of what made her decide to just not go? Yeah.
I think the thought of being trapped in a foreign country, in a war zone, with people treating her like she's not human for another any amount of time was just too much for her.
Yeah.
You know, the time got closer, you know, she just got more and more scared, and finally she broke.
Right. Well, let's hope that breaking is a process of begins a process of healing for her.
I totally agree. And that's what we've been doing for the last 6 months is, going to her psychologist every week, really trying to nurture her and take care of her and make sure that she's okay. Our intention was for her to go back and turn herself in the right way and with the proper legal counsel.
Mm-hmm. So had you gotten any warning that the Eugene police were going to be pick her up?
No warnings at all.
Right. Was that so that must have been quite shocking, actually.
It was very shocking.
Uh-huh. Were you home with her when that happened?
Oh, yeah. I was there. It was 10:30 at night, and I was in my bed, and I was almost asleep, and I heard the door knock, and I got up, and I was in my pajamas, and I opened the door, and there was an APT officer standing in front of me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that raises other issues, I guess. local police being used in the service of the military. So as far as you know, your daughter is on the way or is already at Fort Lewis?
That's my belief, yeah.
Okay. And what are you and she doing right now in terms of what you want is for her to be released from the military, honorably discharged, right?
Yes, so that she can have the medical benefits to take care of her mental health, because this is going to affect her long term. And I think that we need to be doing that for our military so they're not committing suicide and they're not ending up mentally ill, homeless on the street.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We need to take care of our soldiers.
And you have retained a lawyer.
I have.
Okay, and I, someone from Bellingham who is from National Lawyers Guild and is...
Yes, Larry Hildes.
Okay, and is obviously has other clients and is an expert in this field.
Yeah, he's great.
What you'd like people like myself and anybody listening to do in support of Suzanne right now?
If you want to write letters or email Senator Pat Murray in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
She's been very supportive. Congressman DeFazio, Senator Wyden have all been very supportive, so emailing them and showing support for Suzanne so that she can be discharged for the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And pressure Senator Smith to get on board and be helpful. We haven't heard a single thing from his office.
Okay. I wasn't at the vigil last night, but I was there at the county jail this morning as we were waiting for her to be, for the van or whatever, however she's going to be transported. And I know that I was on emotional edge just from, the whole situation and knowing it. And I think also thinking on the way over there about my own two daughters who are in their 20s. And, you could see it in the whole group. Not only the emotion, I think the concern and probably fear, worry for Suzanne, but also, of course, the frustration and anger from this whole war situation.
Yeah.
My understanding is that you have been active, at least opposed to the war from the beginning.
Yes, absolutely.
And I've talked to actually several parents who are in this same situation, and the military families speak out, and Gold Star.
I'm part of military families speak out.
Okay, that makes sense. Gold Star, Families for Peace, those folks who, there's this kind of contradiction. They're against the war, but they have a young person who decides to go into the military. And
exactly.
How did that feel to you when you, that process? I mean, obviously it's not just one feeling, but...
What feels me?
When your daughter came out of high school, because she basically joined right out of high school, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
Astonishing that she would come from an educated peace activist home and decide to go into the military.
Do you have an idea what was she seeking in the military? Do you know?
I think she was seeking an education, travel, something different. She felt like she was in a rut, I think.
Uh-huh.
And instead of really saying, what can we do, Mom? How can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
And, because I would do anything for my kids, she decided to listen to the recruiters who were calling the house and join the military.
And has she shared any thoughts on, I know this is, people don't like to speak for their kids, the folks I'm talking about, but has she shared her thoughts on how
she wants to be a counter-military recruiter.
She wants to be
She does not, she believes that they are she wants to do the work that I'm doing, letting people know what really goes on when you sign on the dotted line and get into the military. You know, I'm not anti-military. I really believe that if we use the military as peacekeepers instead of world police, that we could be more effective. I don't believe in war, and I don't believe in killing. Mm-hmm. I believe in being peaceful and solving conflict with words, not guns. And I think that the military has got some, you know, from the top down is not healthy, and they need to find a different way of representing our country.
What are your concerns about your daughter Suzanne right now and the situation she's in right now?
Right now, I'm hoping that her physical health is okay, and I'm hoping that she. I'm really concerned that they're treating her horribly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned that they're cutting her down and treating her the way they treated her when she was in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried that they are using everything that I have done and said for her against her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried that they're interrogating her. I don't know. You know, I don't know what they're going to do, if they're going to use Gestapo tactics or what they're going to do. But I'm sad and concerned.
Is your lawyer able to give you any sense of what kind of contact you're going to be able to have with,
no,
with her?
No, not yet. He hasn't.
Okay, so we don't know what the military regulations are in terms of
no.
contact. Wow. Well, let's. I think obviously there's a lot of us whose thoughts and heart goes out to both you and Suzanne and. People will do whatever they can. Let's hope we have some good opportunities to help her out and get her out of this situation as soon as possible.
Thank you. And if I know that some people want to, I hate asking for money, but if they want to donate money mm-hmm. or you know contribute to her legal defense or her medical costs,
mm-hmm.
They can get a hold of the CALC office.
Okay.
And they will know what to do.
Okay, I will. I'll do an add-on to this interview with more of the details on where people can contact and stuff like that.
Great.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to share with people? Again, knowing that this is potentially going to be heard from people across the country.
Just to keep the faith. I really have a lot of hope in our country and in our world, and I know that Suzanne is a courageous, courageous, strong young woman, and that this is all happening for a reason. This is really happening for a reason, and I just have complete faith that this is all going to go well, and we're going to change the way the military is treating our young women and the mental health of our soldiers that are being deployed, you know, three or four times in a, you know, the number of couple years
mm-hmm.
to war zones.
Okay, well, obviously this is one more situation that's bringing attention, hopefully a large amount of focus on the conditions that our young people are serving under in the military and in Iraq and Afghanistan, you name it. And
yeah.
Not to mention, I believe it's the Military Family Speak Out who say, bring them home and take care of them when they get home. And that's what this
right.
is about.
That's right.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Sarah. And
thank you, Scott.
The best to you and your family. And please let us know either directly or through others. What we can do if other things come up, situation changes, whatever.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
I was talking to Sarah Rich, who's the mother of U.S. Army Specialist Suzanne Swift of Eugene, who was arrested late Sunday evening for refusing to deploy to Iraq for a second time, and who is now presumably at Fort Lewis under guard, and we're waiting to see what will happen with that. And I want to give you some contact information if you are willing to spend a little bit of time in support of Suzanne Swift. Those contact information is that Sarah mentioned CALC, which is Community Alliance of Lane County here in Eugene, Oregon. And you can call them at 541-485-1755. And that information is also, it's a good number to call if you're in the Eugene area or anywhere and want information on your situation, perhaps if you're in the military, or information on recruiting, counter-recruiting in the military. I'll also give the some contact information for some of the senators and congresspeople that Sarah asked that folks contact. The person that she said we need to pressure is Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon. His phone number is 541-465-6750. That's his local office here in Oregon. Or call also for support Ron Wyden, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, at 541-431-0229. And Congressman Peter DeFazio, also of Oregon, his number, 541-465-6732. Also, Sarah mentioned that Senator Patty Murray of Washington has been very supportive, and she asked that folks contact Senator Patty Murray and encourage her to continue to support and thank her, of course, for the support up to this time. Her phone number is 253-572-3636. This is Scott Burguin of KSOW-LP in Cottage Grove, Oregon.
To hear our previous shows, please visit our archive online at www.freewebs.com/sprav/audio.htm. Please email nhmakingwaves@yahoo.com and let us know what you think of our show. And feel free to call the station in the next hour for more information, 430-9722.